Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. Our topic this hour is vaccinations in the Bay Area. According to the State Department of Public Health, just over 90% of California kindergartners enter school fully vaccinated, a figure only slightly below the national average and in line with immunization targets set by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. But in certain California communities, childhood vaccination rates are dramatically lower. For example, in Marin County, just 84% of kindergartners are fully vaccinated, while some school districts report vaccination rates well below 50%. Given these numbers and amid concerns stemming from December's measles outbreak, some state lawmakers are proposing changes. A new bill introduced last month by Senator Richard Pan would eliminate California's personal belief exemption and require all children, except those qualifying for a medical exemption, to be fully immunized before attending school. But opponents are pushing back, arguing that the legislation inappropriately strips parents of their right to make medical decisions for their children. So tonight, we explore the pros and cons of California's personal belief exemption. What is driving some parents' refusal to vaccinate, and why do some communities have such persistently low vaccination rates? And what more should public health officials do to inform the public about the pros and cons of immunization at large? Joining me in the studio to discuss these issues are Dr. Bob Benjamin. He's Deputy Health Officer for Marin County. Welcome, Dr. Benjamin.
Thank you very much.
We also have Dr. Michael DeRosa. He is chair of the Physician Assistant Department at Samuel Merritt University in Oakland and a family practitioner based in Berkeley. Welcome, Dr. DeRosa.
Thank you.
And in a few moments, we'll be joined by Dr. Jay Gordon. He's a pediatrician based in Santa Monica, and he is in favor of retaining California's personal belief exemption. But first, we're going to go to Dr. Richard Pan, who's also Senator Richard Pan, and he is co-author of Senate Bill 277. Which would remove California's personal belief exemption for childhood vaccinations. He's also a pediatrician and former director of the UC Davis Pediatric Residency Program. And welcome to you, Dr. Pan.
Good evening.
And as always, we invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation. We'll open our phone lines in about 20 minutes. I'll give you that phone number now. It's 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. You can also email or text us now at cityvisions@klw.org. Post a comment at the KLW website or follow us on Twitter at CityVisionsKALW. And a disclosure, as always, as you may know by now, I am a employee of the San Francisco Department of Public Health and faculty at UCSF. My appearance on tonight's program is independent of my affiliations, and the views expressed tonight do not necessarily reflect the views of those two institutions. So, Dr. Pan, back to you. Tell us about the details of the bill that you are putting forth and why you decided to draft it.
So as you mentioned earlier, SB 277, which is being co-authored by Senator Ben Allen, who's a school board member in Santa Monica, and myself, essentially removes the personal belief exemption from the vaccination requirements that are in state law, as well as requires school districts to provide the immunization rates for the schools in which you're enrolling your child into. So when you're enrolling your child into school, you would get the information about the immunization rates and also the rate that's necessary to protect the school from an outbreak. And the reason we did this bill is because we're hearing from parents in our districts that they are concerned about vaccine-preventable illnesses that previously essentially were not in the general community, but after the outbreak of measles from Disneyland, as well as epidemics of whooping cough that we've seen, which have actually led to the deaths of infants, that people are very concerned about, that they don't want to have to worry about going to the store, going to the restaurant. We've had four episodes on BART, going on public transportation or going to daycares or schools, and have to worry about their child being exposed to a disease like measles, a disease that before vaccination actually killed 400 to 500 children a year and also brain damaged another 2,000. This is not the kind of world people want to live in, and We know that these diseases are returning because of low vaccination rates. In fact, just to take measles, for example, measles was declared eliminated from the United States back in 2000, but just last year, in 2014, we had over 600 cases, actually 644 cases of measles in the United States, and we actually had 170 cases after only 2 months, by the end of February, in this country this year. So clearly we're watching these outbreaks get larger and larger. And in fact, there was an article in the San Francisco Chronicle that talks about the fact that we're having these pockets, and that basically diseases are, because these pockets of unimmunized people are accumulating, that these diseases are now able to spread between pocket to pocket, and that's why you had the outbreak that happened in Disneyland, you know, spread out to so many different people. And so this bill is really about public safety. It's about the rights of parents and the ability of parents to be able to go out into the community and recognizing the fact that there are children who cannot get immunized. For example, for measles, if your baby is under the age of 1 year, they are not immunized, so therefore they are vulnerable to measles infections. You have children who may, or actually not just children, people who may have cancer who cannot get immunized because they're receiving chemotherapy. There's other people with other immune issues as well that they are not able to get immunized. So what happens is that they depend on the rest of us to protect them. So their choice to be able to go into a public setting is being compromised because of the low vaccination rates, something that we've taken for granted until I think now, that people are starting to realize that that protection is eroding away. And fundamentally, this bill is about entry into school. So this is not a bill that will send people to anyone's home to get immunized. It basically says that if your child is not being immunized and does not have a medical reason why they should not be immunized, so clearly we recognize there are some children who cannot be immunized, that they basically cannot congregate into schools together and potentially be a pocket of disease.
So a couple of follow-up questions there. You said a lot. Let you catch your breath as well. So the first question is, you mentioned this is about the rights of parents, and I know that one of the opposing viewpoints is that, in fact, this bill perhaps takes away the rights of parents. How would you respond to that?
I would say that, first of all, this bill is about kids going to school, all right, children going to school, and people being able to take their children into public spaces. And that's what we're hearing from parents. They are concerned, and rightfully so, that taking their child to public places. In fact, we've had measles exposures in stores and restaurants, in public transportation, and schools and daycares, that their child may be exposed to a serious disease like measles or whooping cough or other diseases as well, and that basically they want something to be done about that. And what we're saying is that in order for you to enroll your child in school, and this has in fact been declared constitutional by the Supreme Court, that you need to get your child immunized unless there's a medical reason that that would keep them from making that happen.
A second question is, how did we get the personal belief exemption in the first place? What was behind that? Do you know anything about the history of that?
So the history of the personal belief exemption was that when vaccination requirements were passed, not only in California, but across the country, so every state in the union has vaccination requirements for school entry to protect the public health, that some states, in fact, California's in the minority of states that actually passed a personal belief exemption. Most states do not have a personal belief exemption. That basically they recognize that while some people may have some objections, generally that number has been very small. And, in fact, we've been able to achieve high enough immunization rates to protect the public. Unfortunately, because of misinformation spread by anti-vaccine groups, the fact that vaccines have been successful in making these diseases essentially uncommon, so most people don't have any direct experience, we've seen a rising rate of people not getting their children immunized. It's a good thing that we don't have these diseases, but unfortunately there are others who have spread, information and deception to people, creating doubt. So when you don't see the disease, there's a reason why to get immunized, and then you're having people say that it causes autism, which has been thoroughly debunked, lots of other myths as well, that people, of course, get nervous about getting vaccinated, and then they decide to hold off on the vaccine or not to get vaccinated at all. Unfortunately, what this has done is created larger and larger pockets of people who are not vaccinated. So every year in which you have children not who have taken the personal belief exemption, mm-hmm. you're adding to the number of unvaccinated people. Because basically, because as people go through school, they don't check these every year. So what happens is someone doesn't get, gets checked for vaccinations, they say personal belief exemption, they stay unvaccinated. In fact, we've had...
It's not something people have to renew every year.
Yes.
I want to ask you something.
Decades of this going on.
This so-called misinformation that you're describing. The predecessor bill to this, AB 2109, which you are also responsible for, which required documented conversation with a healthcare practitioner for anyone who wanted to claim the personal belief exemption. That has supposedly created a turnaround in the amount of people claiming that exemption because supposedly, I guess, through the conversations with providers, people have really rethought that decision. So there was a dramatic drop in the year since it was implemented, which is successful, I imagine, to you. Why do you feel you have to go farther at this time with this bill? Is it the measles outbreak? Is it something else? Why not just let this work itself out as people have to go through conversations with healthcare providers and they may change their minds and see things more like you see them?
So in 2012, when I passed that bill, 2109, AB 2109, which was opposed by the same people who many people oppose SB 277. When that bill passed, that bill basically we saw that increased rates of exemptions were going to cause a problem. At that point, we did have a whooping cough outbreak. We were hoping that we could cut this off at the pass and that we can try to get our immunization rates, slow down the exemption rate enough so that we wouldn't have to be worried about about outbreaks. Unfortunately, since 2012, in 2013, we had almost 200 measles cases in the country. Last year, we had 644 cases of measles in the United States. And then, of course, we had the outbreak in Disneyland. At the same time, 2010, we had a pertussis outbreak. We again have another pertussis outbreak that happened last year. So clearly, these outbreaks are getting larger and larger, and that we're hitting the point where basically there's enough of a pool of unvaccinated people that the outbreaks are spreading. And as we saw with the Disneyland outbreak. And while certainly I am proud that my bill was able to reduce the personal exemption rate in its first year of implementation, which was this year, the school year, first year, that by 20%, 20%, while certainly a significant change, the first decrease in 12 years of personal exemptions, it probably isn't low enough in order to protect the general public from outbreaks. And that's why we need to take the next step. Fundamentally, we want to get our immunization rates high enough so that people don't need to worry about going to the store, going to a theme park, going to their school or daycare, and worry about their child being exposed to a vaccine-preventable illness. That's what we want to try to achieve. We do not need parents to have to worry about going to public places because they're concerned their child may catch a serious disease. That is not the kind of world we want to live in.
One final question.
We need to get our immunization rates high enough to stop that from happening.
One final question for you. Where is the bill currently, and do you expect it to pass?
Well, certainly I expected to pass. I've been hearing from many constituents who said they strongly support the bill. They want to have safe communities. There are many co-authors of the bill already. We know that we're going to have to work on the bill. But I feel good about the strong support I've heard from people across the board for the bill.
Okay. Well, that was Dr. and Senator Richard Pan. He is one of the co-authors of Senate Bill 277, which would remove California's personal belief exemption from childhood vaccinations. He's also a pediatrician and former director of the UC Davis Pediatric Residency Program. Thanks so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you so very much.
Okay. And next, do we have... Dr. Jay Gordon available? Yes, great. So, Dr. Jay Gordon, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Wonderful. Welcome to the program. You're a pediatrician based in Santa Monica, and you're in favor of retaining California's personal belief exemption. So I'd like to offer you some airtime here to respond to the comments made by Dr. Pan. Go ahead.
Thank you. I don't need as much airtime. Parents have the right to participate in every healthcare decision regarding their children. It's just there can't be any question about that. The idea of removing the right for parents to participate is just abhorrent to any pediatrician who's really thinking about this. If we have a good product, whether it's a healthcare product or a vaccination, inform parents, inform the consumer, and let them make choices. We cannot remove a parent's right to participate in this discussion. When Dr. Pan presented his original bill in 2012, there was a quote that circulated all over the internet, all over the political landscape. And what he said, and I quote, is, "We want these kids to go to school. We don't want to take away the parental right to make vaccine decisions. We want to make sure that parents have an informed decision." And now he's reversed that. And I don't know whether it has to do with the fact that during the last election cycle, he received almost $200,000 from the pharmaceutical industry, the healthcare industry, health professionals industry. I don't know if that had something to do with it, but I do know that he's misrepresenting the reason for a lot of the outbreaks. The CDC was very clear that our whooping cough outbreak is not due to parents seeking exemptions. It's due to our having a whooping cough vaccine that wears off over 2 to 3 years. We need a better whooping cough vaccine. The measles outbreak, which now totals 132 cases in the state of California, we added one case this week, and that person had been vaccinated, by the way, is a wake-up call. These diseases exist. Parents should be informed. Parents should make informed decisions about vaccines, but we must not coerce them. When we coerce people, they run away. They just run away. We should talk to them. We should earn their trust. We should understand that they're intelligent enough to talk to us doctors. We shouldn't mandate and legislate vaccine decisions.
So let's get something clear up front here. You're against removing the personal belief exemption, or you're pro the personal belief exemption. But what's your position on vaccinations in general?
I give vaccines every day. I've received vaccines. My family receives vaccines and will continue to receive appropriate vaccines. The vast majority of the patients in my practice are vaccinated, although they do not adhere to the usual schedule, often by choice. During the measles outbreak, I gave hundreds of measles vaccinations, and I gave them to families with whom I had had a relationship for years, many of whom had decided either not to give the vaccine or to defer the vaccine. And we learned to trust each other. I trusted them. They trusted me. And they asked me, is this the right time? And I said, this is a good time to give the vaccine. I don't really believe that if the measles outbreak threatens healthy California children. But it would be nice to have a smaller outbreak. And the vaccine is not a dangerous vaccine. The way that we give it might not be the safest way. Giving that vaccine to 12-month-old children is arguably not the safest time to give it. But to me, the focus regarding SB 277 is taking away a parent's right to make choices.
And so, but knowing what you know as a pediatrician, how can you square the science that you know with this potential risk that parents are undertaking, not only for their children but perhaps other children? How do you ride that tension there?
That's the point, is that the science supports the idea that parents who are informed will make an informed decision. There's nothing scientific about removing the choice, taking the choice out of a parent's hands. I understand what you're saying. These diseases are still around, and there are places on the planet, and there were times in history when these illnesses posed a greater threat than they do now. But in 21st century America, measles does not pose a great threat to healthy American children.
Okay, I'm going to go to some calls now, and just you'll stay with us for the rest of the hour, and then I want to make sure to get our other two guests in on our conversation. But first, let me reintroduce the program. In case you're just joining us, this is City Visions on 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing proposed legislation that would do away with California's personal beliefs exemption for immunization requirements for children. And with my guests, we were just hearing there a moment ago from Dr. Jay Gordon, a pediatrician based in Santa Monica. And earlier in the hour, we heard from Dr. and Senator Richard Pan, state senator here in California, who is co-author of the bill SB 277, which would remove California's personal belief exemption. In the wings here, ready to join in on the conversation, in the studio with me is Dr. Bob Benjamin, deputy health officer from Marin County, and Dr. Michael DeRosa, a family practitioner based in Berkeley. Our phone lines are currently full, so we'll get to your calls in just a moment. If you'd like to dial in a moment or so, 415-841-4134 is number to dial. Again, 415-841-4134. You have a couple of online ways to reach us as well. There's email or texting at cityvisions@klw.org, posting a comment at the KLW website, or tweeting us at cityvisionsKALW. So let's go to Michelle from Los Angeles. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me on your show.
Yes, go ahead.
So I just wanted to express my concern. You know, there seems to be a lot of media attention, of course, over the measles outbreak, and it appears as though there's a lot of fear-mongering going on. I would really like to see Dr. Pan present some scientific data that unvaccinated or delayed vaccinated children are actually perpetuating illness and disease. It's my understanding that approximately half of the people that had the measles were actually vaccinated, which to me lends itself to that vaccines are not actually effective.
All right. Thank you so much, Michelle. I'm going to have you take your answer off the air. So Dr. DeRosa, again, you're from Samuel Merritt University in Oakland, and you're the chair of the Physician Assistant Department there and a family practitioner based in Berkeley. Both Dr. Gordon and Michelle raised this point of, you know, what's really causing these outbreaks? Is it truly this unvaccinated pool? Or is it the fact that the vaccine's effects wane over time or something else? So how do you respond?
Yeah, thank you. A lot of things to respond to. Let me first correct the one piece of misinformation I can probably correct tonight, which is, I have a doctorate in neuroscience. I practice as a physician assistant, so I'm not in family practice as a physician. I want to make that clear. What we saw in these outbreaks, whether it was the measles outbreak in Ohio in March of last year, where some 380-something cases of measles occurred in an Amish community, largely unvaccinated, and again in December in Southern California, was a little bit different. And I think what has the public health community concerned is you're not seeing these infections traveling to contiguous or geographically related communities. What you're seeing is infection jumping and appearing in clusters where we know that there are clusters of unvaccinated patients. So we do know, in fact, that these outbreaks and these cases have a predilection for unvaccinated populations. Secondly, we also know that where vaccination rates are lower, you can see more of these infections, like varicella or chickenpox, like the measles, in patients who were previously vaccinated. And what I tend to tell my patients is it's simply a numbers game. You give me a vaccine, and I'm going to generate a certain amount of immunity, a certain amount of B cells that carry those antibodies. And if my system, my immune system, is overwhelmed by a viral load or a pathogen load in the community, I can still get a case of that illness, although we believe that those cases tend to be much less severe in patients who are previously vaccinated because they're able to respond more quickly.
Hmm. And yes, Dr. Benjamin from Marin County.
Thank you very much. I'd like to respond to a couple of things that Michelle brought up. One has to do with the fear-mongering and the perception that the vaccines are not effective. Measles vaccine is highly effective. In fact, two doses of measles vaccine confers immunity to 96 to 98% of the people who've received it. Back in 1989-90, when only one measles vaccine was required, in that construct, about 92% of the population was protected. But because measles is such a highly communicable disease, nonetheless, when it came back, it spread like wildfire through a population that had only 6% or 8% susceptibles. Now, and that's what caused the CDC, after much research and working with the folks who, the ACIP, the immunization group, the decision was made to require two measles-containing vaccines. Now, for pertussis, it's different. The pertussis vaccine in years past was a whole-cell vaccine which conferred very, very solid and long-lasting immunity. But it also had some side effects having to do with muscle aches and, in some rare instances, uncontrollable crying, fever, and very, very rarely seizures. So what happened was the vaccine was refined to a point where the side effects, the adverse effects, were minimal, yet it turns out that the duration of immunity was not as good as the original one. The fear that I have is that folks who have not seen not only measles, but polio, varicella, and other diseases don't understand well enough, I think, the severity of the disease as compared to the possible adverse effects of the vaccines themselves. They're very, very minor compared to the diseases themselves.
Dr. Gordon, do you want to respond there?
Oh, yes. I have been in medicine long enough to have seen polio and measles and chickenpox and diphtheria. And I can tell you that I don't want these diseases back. The DPT did not have, the whole cell DPT did not have occasional muscle aches and occasional seizures. It very frequently caused seizures. It very frequently caused severe side effects. As a reversal of, you know, we reversed our field and we created a vaccine, an acellular pertussis vaccine that just doesn't work well enough. It's the best that we've got, and you know what? I use it every single day. And as far as the measles virus jumping from cluster to cluster, you know, during our current outbreak, of the 132 confirmed cases, only 55 of those are confirmed as being unvaccinated. Now, the rest of them, the 70-some, are not confirmed as being completely vaccinated, but a fair percentage of them were. The measles outbreak of 2015 generated tremendous media attention. I don't know exactly what the agenda was, but I can tell you that we're ending up with an agenda of mandatory vaccinations. It's not the right way to go about this. It's not scientifically sound. If we scare people on either side, people who try to scare you out of getting a vaccine are wrong. If you've got the facts, present the facts. There may be reasons for some people not to get the measles vaccine. There may be reasons. But somebody attempting to scare you out of getting the MMR is wrong, just as Dr. Pan and others trying to scare you into getting the vaccine are incorrect.
415-841-4134 is the number to dial to join our conversation. As I mentioned, our phone lines are full, but keep trying. We'll get to some more calls in just a second. I want to reintroduce the program. This is City Visions on Local Public Radio, KLW San Francisco. Actually, Dr. Gordon, if you happen to have your radio on as well, I'm going to ask you to turn it down because I can hear an echo in my headset. We're here to discuss the personal belief exemption that is being challenged at this point by Senate Bill 277. We have on the line with us Dr. Jay Gordon from Santa Monica, and we also here in the studio have Dr. Bob Benjamin, Deputy Health Officer for Marin County, and Michael DeRosa, in a family practice setting in Berkeley as a physician assistant, and also at the PA program at Samuel Merritt University in Oakland. Did I get that right?
Perfect.
Okay. So you can also reach us online at cityvisions@klw.org, post a comment at the KLW website, or tweet us at cityvisions@KALW. So let's go next to Stacy from West Palm Beach, Florida. It's late there, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
But you stayed up to listen. Thanks. What's your question or comment?
Well, first I have a comment, and then I have a question.
Okay, go ahead.
My comment is I keep hearing that the measles were eradicated. However, I'm looking at a study from the Journal of American Medical Association from 2002 stating that in the United States, in the year 2000, there were 86 confirmed cases of the measles. So why do they keep stating it was eradicated when it clearly was not? Second off, I wanted to know why the doctors are pushing to get rid of philosophical exemptions when, according to the American Medical Association, doctors are allowed to exempt themselves from immunizations due to medical, religious, or philosophical reasons.
Okay. So thanks so much, Stacy. I'll have you take your answer off the air. So Dr. DeRosa, did you want to talk about...
Well, I'd like to speak to the eradicated point.
Okay.
I do think it's an unfortunate term. What the CDC meant in 2000 or 99 or 2000 when they declared measles had been eradicated in the United States was that we were no longer seeing transmission within the United States of measles cases that came from the United States. It's well known and well documented that we have had annual measles cases since then, and the belief is that those are largely brought into the United States from other places where measles is still endemic, and there are numerous countries out there where measles is rampant. Significant cases in Brazil, there was a significant outbreak there this year, China, Vietnam, etc. Many places that people that I work with in family practice travel to and come to me for travel vaccinations. So I think that actually one of the mistakes that the CDC has made in all of this is to declare measles eradicated, because it lends parents to the notion that my child isn't likely to get this illness. And if they're not likely to get this illness, then the only thing that factors into my calculus about whether or not to immunize them is the perception of risk associated with that immunization, because I'm not protecting them from anything they're actually going to get. And that's an unfortunate term, because measles certainly is present in the United States every year.
Okay. Anyone want to comment on Stacy's comment about the AMA? Anyone know about that?
The idea that doctors are
yes.
allowed to?
Mm-hmm.
The Pediatric Journal just published an article last week showing that over 90% of doctors bend the vaccine rules, and they do it at the request of parents. And it's just common sense. You talk to parents. You talk to parents. Parents who are not comfortable getting 6 vaccines at 2 months of age may be very comfortable getting 1 vaccine and then another and then another, and you'll end up with a completely vaccinated child. Or else you're going to end up stampeding the parents away to getting either a different type of health care.
Okay. I want to keep the calls coming in. So let's go next to Cotty from Oakland. Cotty, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks so much. First off, I just want to say thank you to Dr. Gordon for representing the other side of the truth here. I wanted to make a few clarifications specifically about the bill that Dr. Pan had proposed. It leaves no education options for families that choose to delay, spread out, or opt out of one or more vaccines. So this bill applies to public, private, and homeschool children. So any families with conscientious or religious concerns about vaccines will be forced to be truants. And just a couple more clarifications, if I might. As for the CDC, just under 1% of children are fully unvaccinated. Most families that get exemptions do so for selective vaccine, to get selective vaccines, or to do a delayed schedule, as Dr. Gordon had mentioned. And 57% of the cases in California of measles were in adults over 20 years old. And according to Dr. Poland from the Mayo Clinic, last one here, over 50% of measles cases are in vaccinated individuals. So vaccine failure is a real thing. It's documented not by skeptics, but actually by respected scientists. And the majority of the cases this year in California were in adults. So I just don't understand why this severe Senate bill has been pushed on us when clearly there's a greater issue at hand of vaccine failure. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks so much. Dr. Benjamin, did you want to respond to some of that?
Well, I think that Dr. Pan's bill addresses attendance in both public and private schools. I'm not sure. In fact, I don't think it applies to homeschooling. So the issue here is whether or not to allow into a congregate setting like a school children who are unvaccinated and who can therefore bring diseases, vaccine-preventable diseases, into that setting. I don't believe it applies to homeschooled kids.
Now, how about this delayed schedule option or possibility? I don't have the vaccination table in my head to be able to say, is that relevant? If people delay the vaccinations earlier before school age, could kids catch up by the time they actually have to be in school?
Yes, they could, if they would.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with a delayed schedule is that the schedule was determined in order to obtain maximum immunity as early as possible. By delaying, what it does is it puts off that attainment of full immunity for longer than most of us would like.
Dr. DeRosa.
A couple of points. And certainly there's no monopoly on misinformation or fear-mongering in this debate. I think both sides are guilty of it from time to time. I think the use of the term vaccine failure, because a previously vaccinated person can contract an illness for which they were vaccinated, is incorrect. What we do know is that there is some level of protection conferred because the cases of chickenpox, which is a common one, or measles that those patients get when they've been previously vaccinated are much less severe than tend to be in unvaccinated patients. So I think that's probably not a vaccine failure, but what it may well be, because those cases occur more frequently in areas where under vaccination is occurring, is that their immune system or their immunity that they were rendered by that vaccine is being overwhelmed by a viral load in the community.
So there's no vaccine that's actually 100% protective?
No.
And so so these things are kind of going hand in hand, meaning yeah. that if you have more unvaccinated people in the community, then you perhaps you're testing the limits of those
exactly.
who are vaccinated. You wanted to say more?
Well, one more comment about the cluster notion. As well as being a PA and a department chair, I'm a parent. I have a 13-year-old son who's at Albany Middle School. And so I did some investigation on the state website and discovered that the seventh graders at Albany Middle School, there were 29 under-vaccinated kids, or 29 exemptions. And to get to Dr. Pan's point and the point about patients over 20, if I assume the same rate of the sixth and eighth graders at Albany Middle School, I'm now talking close to 90 kids in a population of 270. That means that a third of the children that my child is in school with are potentially undervaccinated. And if you extrapolate that over the last 10 years, then in a community of 19,000 people in Albany, you can have fairly significant numbers of unvaccinated people built up in a cluster. So it's not surprising to see patients over 20 years old. And we also know that with measles, for example, under 5 and over 20 are the age groups that get hit the hardest.
And Dr. Gordon, back to you there to respond.
Dr. DeRosa is correct. The vaccine failure, the pertussis vaccine has a very high failure rate. The measles vaccine does not. The measles vaccine is one of the most effective vaccines around. It's a product good enough to sell to our clients, to our patients. And if we present the right information, I think a lot of people are going to buy that measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. I don't think we need to take away their right to either defer it or delay it a year or two. And Dr. DeRosa is also correct. There are a lot of partially vaccinated children, but being partially vaccinated might mean that they missed one of the polio vaccines in the series of four or five, or it might mean that they missed one of the Hib vaccines and that the school required a personal beliefs exemption. But I think that there's only a very small percentage of children in the state of California who are missing the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. There are some who may be missing the second one, but that vaccine does not have a high failure rate. I agree. And if we believe in that product, we should sell it with good information rather than with coercion.
I'm going to go to some more calls here. Let's go next to Simon from Berkeley. Simon, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. A couple of comments. One which is addressed a little earlier on, which is about the scheduling of vaccines, is that if you can increase the amount of time between each individual vaccine, there's lesser chance of autism happening. It's when the multiple vaccines are given in a very short period of time that autism is likely to arise. And the second point, which is more important, is that it's time to get thimerosal, mercury, out of vaccines. It just doesn't need to be there anymore.
Okay.
Mercury is a toxin. It's a neurotoxin, and is most likely to be causing autism.
Okay. Thank you, Simon. We're going to have you
a real chance of having vaccines to be safe.
Got it. Thank you so much. Respond to that.
Thimerosal was taken out of childhood vaccines years ago, and the autism rate continued to go up.
Any other thoughts? This is a hot one that doesn't.
Thimerosal remains in the flu shot. And even though there's certainly no proof that thimerosal causes autism, the autism rate may have begun to rise, but it was concomitant with the widespread use of the flu vaccine. But again, there's no proof. But it's also not correct to say that we've removed thimerosal from childhood vaccines. One of the most widely used vaccines on the planet is the flu shot, and a significant proportion of those vaccines contain mercury, contain thimerosal. But most of the vaccines, in 1999, the American Academy of Pediatrics nearly panicked when they found out how much mercury was in childhood vaccinations. And they said, we must remove it with all due haste. And it has been removed as of the early 2000s, 2001, 2002, 2003. Those stocks were used up.
Dr. Ben,
I'm not arguing that vaccines are not safe. I don't like that argument.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Dr. Benjamin.
One of the tragedies here is that because of this belief that was promulgated about vaccines and their contents causing autism is that an awful lot of money was spent on disproving that, excuse me, rather than investing that same money into looking at what the true causes of autism really are.
So to Dr. Gordon's point, he is not anti-vaccination. He's, what do you say, pro-choice for parents here, right? I feel like we're kind of almost talking, not completely connecting around this particular topic. So part of the discussion. So Dr. Benjamin and Dr. DeRosa, how do you respond to Dr. Gordon specifically around the personal right of parents, and that it's actually not, you're probably going to scare more people away if you try to coerce them? Dr. Gordon, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but that's kind of what you've been saying, correct?
Yes.
So what How do you respond to that specifically? Because I think we could probably do a tit for tat around the science, mm-hmm. all, you know, for quite a while, and not get at the core issue here, which is it's not about vaccinations. Yes, no. It's the leaving parents the option to choose. Dr. Benjamin, and you did some studies in Marin on why parents are not vaccinating. So if you can bring some of that in there too,
most of those have been raised actually by Dr. Gordon in terms of the reasons. Mm-hmm. The study that we did in Marin, the reasons for personal belief exemptions. Number one, children get too many vaccines at the same time. Folks were uneasy with newer vaccines. They believed they contained unsafe toxins. They believed that vaccines can cause autism. Some of them actually believe that the vaccines cause the diseases that they're supposed to protect against. And the other one was that vaccines aren't necessary as the diseases that they protect against aren't common anymore. I think that parental rights are at several different levels, and the one that Dr. Pan's bill is addressing is the right for parents to send their schools, their children to schools, and feel assured that they're not going to be exposed to vaccine-preventable diseases by people who opt not to do it. It's almost like, we have speed laws in this country, and nobody objects to penalizing the people who break those laws. We're not really talking about penalizing because there are other options in terms of schools.
Like homeschooling?
Homeschooling. Mm. And so I think that's where Dr. Pan's bill, that's what he's trying to address.
Dr. DeRosa?
I think CNN did a study recently that showed that 80% of their respondents were in favor of mandatory vaccination laws. I think there's widespread support for such a law. That's not to minimize parents who have concerns. I'm a parent too, and I totally get the emotional, you know, kind of moment of taking your child in for that vaccine and seeing them get stuck and wondering if you're doing the right thing. But we all suffer restrictions on our liberty for the common good and for public health. And I think that's where Dr. Pan was going with this, whether it's seatbelts or helmets or fences around pools. We do this on a regular basis to ensure public safety. And I think, you know, when you look at things like autism and that connection, we're talking about something close to the domain of climate science. The vast majority of the scientific community believes that link has been roundly debunked and that vaccines are imminently safe. Mm.
And of the 50 states, only 18 allow personal belief exemptions, and two of them don't allow personal belief exemptions or religious exemptions. And believe it or not, they are Mississippi and West Virginia. Mm-hmm. They only allow medical exemptions. So we in California truly are in the minority in that regard.
And Mississippi has the lowest rate of measles. And when you rank states in America, Mississippi is number 50 in health care for children. So the answer is not mandating vaccination. The answer is informing parents, gaining their trust, talking to them, not resorting to hyperbole, just talking to them, not trying to scare them into or out of vaccinating, but retaining a parent's right. That's absolutely crucial because vaccines, unlike seat belts and unlike fences around pools, are not an unequivocally risk-free medical intervention. The government acknowledges that there are risks. They paid out billions of dollars acknowledging that there are risks. There's not been enough proof to satisfy me that vaccines cause autism, and there's not been enough proof to satisfy anybody on the show right now. But we do know that vaccines have medical side effects, medical drawbacks. And for whatever benefits they may carry, parents have a right to look at the benefits and the risks and then make a choice for their own children.
So how do you, but then how do you grapple, Dr. Gordon, with this idea of sort of the choice of, sounds like a minority of parents, and the implications it has for the larger population? How do you balance those two things? I mean,
with some difficulty, because I understand that parents who do not vaccinate their children are taking a risk for their children. There's an increased risk of contracting whooping cough or measles if you're not vaccinated, and they're also decreasing herd immunity. But I don't think that coercion is the answer. In other words, when I give vaccines, I give them with true informed consent. Parents understand that I have a bias. Parents understand that my point of view is not supported by the majority of the medical community. But they also understand that they're the ones who make the ultimate decision with all the information. So I'm not saying that these parents are correct. I'm not saying that the right thing to do is to skip all vaccines. What I'm saying is that what's really incorrect is to take that decision, to take the parents' rights away. We can debate the other. There are two separate issues here, whether or not vaccines are safe or effective, whether or not vaccines create too many side effects to be, again, judged unequivocally good. That's a separate debate altogether. But the discussion this evening that I thought we were having had to do with whether or not parents have the right to decide when and how their children are vaccinated.
Go ahead, Dr. DeRosa.
I'm not saying I disagree with Dr. Gordon. I think, however, for every parent or physician who might say that, there's an equally valid position that I have the right to know that my child is safe when he goes to school.
And again, if we want to retain that herd immunity, I think that the way that we do it is by presenting our case honestly and with as much information as parents need. And the vast majority of people get vaccinated, 92, 93, 95%. The vaccination rate went up during 2015, and the vaccination rate has held steady. And as Dr. Benjamin and Dr. DeRosa know, during the whooping cough outbreaks, there wasn't more whooping cough in counties with lower vaccination rates. The vaccination rates didn't seem to matter because the vaccine wasn't good enough. With measles, there are clusters. There are clusters. And if we want to diminish these clusters, or if we want the people within these clusters to have full information, we just can't chase them away.
Okay, I'm going to get a couple more calls here. Let's go to Ann from San Mateo. Ann, welcome to the program.
Yes, hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes, I want to disagree with, point out something that Dr. Gordon said that is incorrect. He said that healthy children do not have to be worried about getting measles. This, I'm a physician. This is not true. Measles is definitely more dangerous for immune-compromised children, and they are terribly at risk. But healthy children can get horrible complications from measles, including brain damage, and so that is really a piece of misinformation. The other issue about herd immunity is my grandchildren live in Santa Monica, and my granddaughter is under 6 months. She cannot go to her brother's preschool because something like 25% of the kids in his preschool are not vaccinated, and she can't be vaccinated yet. So she's at risk, and so is every young baby who's too young to be vaccinated against measles. So a great, both from the point of view of herd immunity and from the point of view of in any way downplaying the dangerousness of measles, this is really a disservice to this program.
So Anne, to pick up on Dr. Gordon's point, what about the right of parents to make this decision, or that this bill specifically is coercing or forcing the issue, and that's just not the right way to go? And more education and more conversation is really what we need here rather than forcing the hand of parents.
Well, the problem is that my understanding is a very high percentage of those who refuse to vaccinate are very highly educated. So it's not clear that education necessarily leads to good decisions.
Thanks so much, Anne, for your call. Dr. Gordon, do you want to respond to that point?
Yes. I'm not saying that healthy children can't get measles. I'm just saying that the disease itself really doesn't pose a great threat. The complication rate's extraordinarily low. In the past 12 years, we've had one fatality in the United States, one fatal case of measles in 12 years. And a six-month-old child going to preschool, attending a preschool or visiting, is not necessarily at risk from measles. That child's at risk from routine winter viruses. I don't want a six-month-old with two-and-a-half-year-olds at daycare or preschool. Hmm. And it's not because I'm worried about measles. Measles is an extraordinarily low-incidence disease, has been for many years. We have 330 million Americans. We have 170 cases of measles. We've got one case for every 2 million Americans. Yes, there are clusters, and I thought it was an interesting observation that very highly educated parents...
That's one I wanted you to comment on, actually.
People, the more you know about vaccinations, the more you are likely to examine the schedule or to examine vaccinations in general. I don't think that highly educated and highly informed parents choose not to vaccinate. I think they choose to vaccinate perhaps in different ways.
Dr. DeRosa, quickly, because we have a couple minutes left.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting that Dr. Gordon is using a low death rate from measles as a reason not to vaccinate, but I know that a lot of parents do. And that's a kind of spurious argument, right? Because that incidence rate is low because of widespread vaccination.
Okay. So I'm told we have Dr. Bob Sears on the line, the famous Dr. Sears from Orange County. Dr. Sears, welcome to the program. Very brief, unfortunately, because we have less than 2-3 minutes of the program left.
Well, thanks, Joseph. I appreciate you having me on and everyone else being here. And I thank Dr. Pan for making himself available, too. My number one worry about this bill, Joseph, is Dr. Pan claims the bill won't force vaccinations, and he's assured us that no one's going to show up at parents' homes to force vaccinations. My worry is that the way the bill is worded right now is that every homeschooler does have to register with a public school or a private school. Every homeschooler must register somewhere, and this bill does include all homeschoolers. It's going to require them to homeschool in order to register with school. And so, you know, as a full-time pediatrician down here in Orange County, kind of in the trenches, working every day, I like to imagine what's going to happen if something passes like this. And the way it's worded now, you know, we have 9 million children in California. If, you know, 5% of them are unvaccinated or not fully vaccinated, that's 500,000 children. If 10% aren't fully vaccinated, that's 1 million children that, according to this bill, their parents will now be in violation of the law if they don't fully vaccinate, and their children will be truant because they won't be allowed to register for homeschooling. And that's a complete problem with this bill. And I like to call out Dr. Pan and ask him sometime in the near future to respond to that problem, because we're going to have a lot of Californian parents that are worried, you know, they're going to lose custody of their children and someone's going to show up at their house because their kids are not legally registered for homeschooling. Mm. That's my biggest worry, how this is going to play out in practical terms.
Okay. I'm going to have to cut you there, but thanks for joining us. I just want to give the in-studio guests about 10 seconds each to kind of get some last words, again, addressing Dr. Gordon's point. How do we bridge this gap? We obviously, the lines have been ringing. The emails we've been getting, they're all anti-vax. Maybe people have, like, flooded us with this tonight, but it seems like there's a lot of concern out there. How do we bridge the gap between your positions and what Dr. Gordon is saying is that, you know, we can't force people because they're just going to push back. Dr. Benjamin.
I agree completely with Dr. Gordon that education is critical in parental decision-making. The problem is when they just decide, thank you, no, we're not going to do it. That decision, although it seems to be an individual one, has huge societal implications.
And so actually get Dr. Gordon to give me the last word there. Do you want to say more something there?
I think that parents must have the right to choose, and I agree that there are implications to decisions not to vaccinate, and parents need to be aware of that. And after they're aware of that, they should get as much information as they possibly can and then make choices.
So that's City Visions for this evening. I'd like to thank my guests, Dr. Bob Benjamin, Dr. Michael DeRosa, Senator and Dr. Richard Pan, Dr. Jay Gordon. Thanks for joining me. For a link to this and other City Visions shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page at klw.org. Our engineer this evening is Eric Wayne. Tonight's show is produced by Ann Harper. Join us next Monday for a conversation about the tensions within San Francisco's Catholic community around the Affirm and Believe statements added to teachers' contracts. This is Joseph Pache. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.